Welcome to another bonus episode of Sleep Whispers, an extra treat for my Soak Plus members. This is bonus episode number 104, and it's titled A Wilderness Survival Story, Part 5, Bows That Start Fires and Shoot Arrows. Now, as a reminder, what you are about to hear is a helpful survival guide, but it's written to sound like a dramatic survival adventure. So listen closely, and you'll hear actual tips that could help you in a survival situation. Or you can just lean back and enjoy the drama and the adventure of the story. In part 4, the prior episode, you learned how to capture a rabbit, how to cook edible fungus, and you also learned about the curious taste of beaver tail. In this episode, you'll learn how to create a bow drill for starting fires, as well as how to create a bow for shooting arrows. Now, I trust that you can easily visualize a hunting bow, but you may not be familiar with a fire starting bow. So, I'll post an image of a fire-starting bow drill for my Soak Plus members. Also, I'll soon stitch together parts 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 of this survival story, so you can enjoy them all as a single super duper long episode. Stay tuned for that treat. May tonight's story distract your squirrels, calm your mind, and help you to fall asleep. I hope you enjoy it. A Wilderness Survival Story, Part 5. Bows That Start Fires and Shoot Arrows. I awoke in the morning to find the woods dripping wet and the world gray with a cold, drizzling rain. From my fire, a small, thin wisp of smoke arose. I hurried to replenish the fuel and save the little life that was left in the embers, but I was too late. The dark sky poured forth a torrent of rain, and with a faint hiss, my last hot coals fizzled out. Soaked through, chilled, miserable, and disgusted, I crept into my hut. I hoped to be able to start another fire in my usual way, using my knife, pebble, and handkerchief. Unfortunately, though, my handkerchief was just too wet to ignite. I wouldn't be able to create a new fire for a while. My attention then shifted to my hunger, and I only had some uncooked fungus that I could eat at the moment. Well, I could go try to find some mussels, frogs, or fish, but without a fire, I would have to eat those raw, and as hungry as I was, my hunger pangs were not strong enough for that to be a good option. I just continued to sit in my lean-to, most of which was pretty wet. Luckily, there was a dry spot right in the center of my shelter, so I did my best just to stay there. My wet clothes clung to my skin, chilling me to the bone each time the wind swirled around me. Summer was obviously over, and the autumn rains had begun. In a few weeks, more icy winds, and most likely, some snow squalls would follow. All I desired at this moment was a large, warm, roaring fire. I could have been laughing at the elements instead of cursing my wet and cold conditions. Without fire, I truly realized how helpless I was. I needed to safeguard myself against being in this predicament again. I began mulling it over, partially because I needed a solution, and partially because it took my mind off the coldness. Towards noon, however, the rain ceased, the sky cleared, and by mid-afternoon, the sun was shining brightly. I lost no time in finding a large stone in the sun to dry my handkerchief. After a short while, it was once again dry, and I had a new blazing fire. My next priority was to cook some food, while also putting some warmth back into my chilled bones. I knew my charred handkerchief may not last much longer, so I started to create a backup. I tore some bits off my shirt, and I charred those in the same way I had done to my handkerchief. I placed all these newly charred bits of cloth into a box I had made out of birch bark. My goal with the birch box was to protect them from getting wet again, to make doubly sure that these containers were watertight. I smeared the edges of the boxes with pitch. Once finished, my memory returned to my earlier predicament. Earlier in the day, I had decided that I need another way to create fire. My current method of flint and steel worked well, but if I lost them, then I'd be unable to make fire. I was determined to try to create a bow drill and spindle. This device looks like a very small bow for shooting arrows, except it creates friction fires. It's sort of like rubbing your hands together to create heat, except a bow and spindle is used to spin a stick. The spinning stick then creates enough friction against a piece of wood to start a fire. Well, hopefully. Creating the bow part would be an easy matter. Spruce trees were everywhere, and I decided to collect lots of spruce branches because there were actually two types of bows that I wanted to make. One for making fires, and one for shooting arrows. so I collected several spruce branches that should be suitable for both of those. Right now, though, I was going to focus on creating my bow and spindle for making fires. Once I had a suitable piece of wood for my fire-making bow, I found a stick that would work as the spindle portion. The stick was a straight, old section of dry fir root. It was from a tree which had been torn up and blown over by some winter storm years before. A piece of the dry, weathered wood from the same tree served as material from which to make the fire block. Now, what's the fire block? The fire block is the piece of wood that would be stationary while the spindle stick turned on it. Next, I needed some tinder, something that would ignite easily as I created the heat from the friction. This was more difficult than I anticipated. I knew shredded cedar bark would work well, but I couldn't find any cedar trees. So instead, I decided to try some thin, papery, dry birch bark, which was flaking off some birch trees. Now armed with these objects, I returned to my lean-to, and I prepared my materials to create a friction fire. I started by whittling one of the flexible, springy spruce limbs into a rude bow. I next needed some flexible roots, or cordage, to string the fire bow, but I knew that the roots would probably break if I wound them and pulled vigorously around the spindle stick. So instead, I used one of my shoelaces, and then I replaced my shoelace with a thin root. I was quite pleased by this idea, because I really didn't have to sacrifice anything. Next, I whittled the dry fir root into a double-pointed spindle stick. In the end, it was about 15 inches long. With the tip of my knife blade, I dug out a notch in the piece of fir wood that would serve as my fire block. The spindle stick would spin in this notch to create the friction heat. Alright, I was now ready for my first attempt at fire making with my bow drill. I wound my shoelace around the spindle stick just once. And then, after hooking the ends of the shoelace to the flexed birch bow, I nested the tip of the spindle stick into the notch of the fire block. I steadied the fire block with one foot by basically stepping on it. I held the bow with my right hand, and I pressed on the spindle stick with my other hand. With even, steady strokes, I moved the drill back and forth, back and forth, with a motion almost like I was sawing wood. The spindle stick turned in the fire block, and with confidence, I increased my speed. a small mound of brownish, powdery sawdust began to accumulate on the fire block where my spindle stick was moving. Gradually, the pile increased. The hole made by the spindle stick in the block grew larger and larger. A faint smell of scorching wood greeted my nostrils. Harder and harder, I pressed down on the spindle stick, while faster and faster, I moved the bow drill. An instant later, the sawdust turned black, and a slender column of smoke rose from it. Dropping the drill, I stooped down, and I blew gently on the smoldering powder. As the smoke increased, I added small bits of the papery birch bark, and I continued to blow on it. Suddenly, the bark burst into a flame. I slowly fed it increasingly larger bits of sticks to keep the flame alive. Once my fire was big and strong, I stood up and celebrated. I jumped, I danced, I swung my arms all around. What an amazing feeling this was. I now had two different ways to make fire. I relaxed with a smile on my face for a while before I moved on to my next task. Soon enough, I was ready to try my hand at creating a bow and some arrows. I spent a long time scraping and whittling down the best of my spruce branches to form a bow. The ones I had selected were dead, seasoned limbs. I knew that green wood would warp and would have a very limited spring. At last, my bow branch was ready, and now I needed a bowstring. For this purpose, a hemlock root should be suitable because it was more of a pulling tension than a winding tension. But to increase the strength of the roots, I would need to braid several of them together. After a short period of doing a lot of braiding, I strung my bow to check the tension. I pulled on the bowstring and let it go. It made a very pleasant, twang sound. All seemed good so far. I put my bow down, and I then went for a jaunt into the woods to find some sticks that could serve as arrows. Now, although there were sticks everywhere, I was frustrated at how few were actually straight and smooth. Regardless, I grabbed the best options that I could find and returned to camp, although I really wasn't happy with any of them. At this point, my focus suddenly shifted to my growing hunger. I examined the beaver meat and fish which I'd hung up earlier. Unfortunately, they both smelled horrible, and I immediately tossed them into the river. I was too tired at the moment to go hunting at the frog pond or looking for fish at the brook, so I settled for some mussels and fungus. Once my hunger was quenched enough, I decided I'd done enough for the day, and I tucked myself in for the night. The next morning, I visited my deadfall trap, but no luck. I hadn't caught anything, even though it had been sprung. I next checked my trout pools at the brook, but once again, no luck. The reason was simple. The brook had risen so high by the recent rains that it was impossible to dam up any of the pools I had created. Even my frog searching didn't go well. I only found one single small frog after a long search. There was some good news, though. While searching for frogs, I discovered some thick bushes with reddish stems. The branches on these bushes were so straight and smooth that I knew they would be perfect for arrows. I later learned that this bush was known as arrowwood, and sure enough, it was used by Native Americans for creating arrows. I now busied myself at arrow making, even though I didn't have any feathers. My hope was that my featherless arrows would work well enough to down a bird. Then I would have some feathers. I next prepared the arrowheads. The beaver's bones were the only material that I had for this purpose, but I found it difficult to cut and sharpen these bones into any resemblance of an arrowhead. I found it so challenging that I even thought about creating arrowheads from the pebbles of the river. Well, to be open about it, I more than thought about it. I gave it a go, but I only ended up with bruised fingers and useless pieces of rock. So I went back to my plan with the beaver bones. After many hours, I finally cut and ground down some bones until they had sharp points at one end and a recess at the other, so I could attach it to the stick for the arrow. I cut notches into one end of each of the arrows, so that way I could attach the arrowheads. I slid the arrowheads into the notches and secured them to the arrow with some cordage I had made from the beaver. My bow and arrows were finally complete. I practiced until dark, and I found that I could frequently hit a target that was the size of a partridge, but only if I was within about 20 feet. Anxious to test my weapons on some real game, I rose early the following morning. I entered the woods in search of partridge. I soon sighted a flock of grouse among the fir trees. I approached slowly and got close. I placed an arrow on the string, drew the bow, and let it fly. To my delight, my arrow hit the mark and fell to the forest floor. I was quite sad for the bird, and I thanked it with a soft breath. I didn't enjoy this part of survival, but I knew it was necessary. I brought the bird back to my camp and began to carefully save its feathers. Although I was itching to prepare the feathers for my arrows, hunger once again overtook me. I roasted the bird over my fire, and then I appreciated every bite that extended my survival time out here. Once I was done eating, I devoted the rest of the day to feathering my arrows. My next challenge was to construct a quiver for carrying all my lovely arrows. The beaver skin worked quite well for this purpose, and it still had plenty of room for carrying food or other supplies. With another successful day of survival behind me, I bedded down for the night. Tomorrow was going to be a long day of tramping, foraging, and hunting. This is the end of part 5. Stay tuned for part 6 in an upcoming bonus episode of Sleep Whispers. Thank you for supporting my podcasts. I truly appreciate it.